that's me playing bass there.
Is it?
I'm playing upright bass on that.
Really?
Yeah, and that's your buddy Jimmy McIntosh from the Lon Bronson Band. He's playing
really?
Guitar.
Really? Is that the Lon Bronson Band?
No, it's not, actually. It's a guy from our show, Mike Jones, who arranged that. But it's Lon is playing trumpet on it, and it's a few other guys from that band. So you
great
know
band.
The band playing the Penn Jillette theme, because this is the Penn Jillette show on Free FM with Michael Godeau and Drew Carey, who's here to pimp nothing. You're not in Vegas tonight?
No. Nope.
Nothing. You can just talk about whatever you want.
I got nothing going on. What about these? You have all these nudie cards on your
yeah,
table here.
Yeah, a lot of nudie cards.
I wonder.
Eight decks. Of
right now,
cards.
I'm thinking of whatever happened to these women.
Yeah, you know, I've often thought that if you were like an existential private eye, and you just wanted to find out stuff that no one hired you for, no one cared about, one of the things you could do is just pick, like, you know, remember the channel in New York that had the old like smoker films? They'd show all night, like
was it Blue TV
yeah,
or something
yeah,
like that
Midnight
was called?
Blue or
Midnight Blue, yeah.
And they'd show these smoker films, you know, from these stag films.
Yeah.
And show them from, like, what looked to me like, you know, the 20s, but was probably the early 60s or late
50s.
And I often thought, how much fun would it be to just go to a private... See, when you got money, we've got money, we should put
together
enough money to
down.
Go to a private dick and just say... Four of clubs. Where is she today?
The
find her.
Private dick. It'd be like tracking down Betty Page or something.
Yeah, yeah. Except more arbitrary.
People were really looking for her for the longest time.
Yeah, they really were. And it turns out, you know that people, those images of Betty Page, you know,
yeah.
with the bangs and the
yeah.
fetish gear, those images that are now like on MTV and are part of the whole world and part of our culture,
yeah.
people went to jail for those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's astonishing. And people should remember that when they get so so uptight that, you know, the times will change. You know, the times will change and things will be okay.
Yeah, remember that. When you listen to the show 20 years from now, smoking a joint, doing your line of coke at the park with nobody bothering you, you can think, wow, people used to go to jail for this.
Yeah, that was goofy. That was just a wacky
yeah.
thing.
Why did that happen?
Imagine that. Although it does, you know, it does.
Our jails used to be overcrowded with people that did nothing but try to put a little drugs in their system and get high for a little
and
while.
And now in the future, when you go to jail, you usually get a 5 or 6 room suite.
Yeah. Now you want to go to jail.
Plenty of room. Plenty of room in the jails.
All the jails have a mechanical banana. we were doing a promo before we started taping the show, and there was going to be some big fetish ball going on, and they had a mechanical banana.
Yeah. And Mr. Improv couldn't think of a joke.
I couldn't think of a joke for Mechanical Banana because it was so bizarre.
And now you've had more time to think about it, and you
got
still
nothing.
Haven't got a joke. Gudo, you hired the Mechanical Banana?
I've used the Mechanical Banana.
I chipped my tooth on a Mechanical Banana.
There's the joke. You got the joke. But what, it's a
mechanical bull shaped like a banana.
Uh-huh.
So
and then people ride
people it.
No, I don't know. You're probably going to get mad at me for saying this, Gudo, but that's good. There was a show in town several years ago, back between your marriage and your divorce and
yes.
your remarriage and
mm-hmm.
all that.
You've been through all that?
Yeah.
yeah.
He married the same woman twice. Married or divorced or remarried.
I chipped my tooth on her the first time.
And there was a show that had a woman riding a mechanical bull topless. You know, and I heard about that show, and then 2 days after I heard about that show, someone told me Michael Godeau was dating her. Did you really go to that show, see a woman riding a topless bull, and a topless woman riding a fully clothed bull, and say, I got to go out with her?
I did, yes.
Who's that girl that, I can't think of, like, Kylie, whatever, she's a Australian singer, and she had breast cancer, really hot. Da, 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 da,
she can't be as hot as you, Drew.
No, she's super hot. Kylie something starts with an M.
McClonically.
Something like that, yeah. She had a video once I saw online where she rides a mechanical bull.
Yeah.
But is she topless?
No, but she didn't need to be.
Better yes,
that
you
she
do
wasn't.
Need to be. You do need to be. Did you ever see the
I
movie?
Like a little tease.
The greatest
because I feel guilty about sex.
The Pentecostal gave
yes.
you that. No, I don't like any tease at all.
Oh, really?
My line on lingerie is, that's nice, take it off.
Really?
And I've said this many times on the show, there's no one I wouldn't rather see naked, including Ernest Borgnine.
Really?
Anybody is better off naked, yeah.
Oh,
did you ever see? Did you ever see
our first argument.
Did you ever see Private School for Girls? The greatest movie ever made?
can't remember.
There's a she's like Betsy Russell. Remember she was in the Betsy. Wasn't that the name of the movie that was on? Oh, this, we're talking about 20 years ago.
Private
School for Girls. They have a woman.
I think it's from Netflix.
They have a woman riding a horse topless. And not only the horse is topless, but she also is.
Riding a topless horse.
They go to slow-mo, just the way they should. It's just the most... I mean, if I were making a movie, this is the movie I would be.
See,
it's just perfect.
I like... You know, remember on the Man Show, they used to have the women on trampolines bouncing up and down?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that was the sexiest thing in the world. Like, these hot, all-American-looking chicks, you know, flashing their panties and just... Boo-ee! You know, slow motion. Like, I'd rather watch that than, like, a hardcore...
Yeah.
Porn.
Well, see, we disagree. That's my misunderstanding with all of this stuff, like Baywatch. You know, Baywatch. You just go, if you're going to watch this, first of all, watch someone who can act, and then go get your porno someplace else. I'm like Henry Ford. I believe in assembly lines.
Right, but when you
I don't
Baywatch,
want sexy people to do drama.
Baywatch.
I want drama done by good people, and then hardcore porno.
Yeah, but Baywatch is for people that aren't old enough or in a social situation where they cannot buy pornography.
Okay,
like guys that are married and they can be with their wife and go, oh, Baywatch, honey, let's watch Baywatch. And they can totally blank out and just like zone in on all the slow motion running down the beach with girls in bikinis that they used to do on Baywatch.
I have like a confession, Mick. I don't think I ever saw Baywatch.
I only saw like 10 minutes of it once, and that's what I saw. It was like a girl, like a teenage girl, 15 years old or whatever, on the show she was playing. I don't know how old she really was, but they had like this music video thing they made with
something. A 15-year-old girl?
She's playing a teenage girl. I don't know how she was, something like that. And she
because
was in a bikini
know, according to the
running down the beach in slow motion.
Laws, if that you sexually depict an underage person.
She was running down the beach in a bikini, not sexual at all. I'm sorry.
Not sexual at all.
Yeah, it was weird. I remember it really distinctly because I remember I was in Las Vegas, and it was during the time they were having the AVN Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at, what the hotel was I? What is that?
What is that? Is that someone's phone? What's going on? What's the sound? What is that sound? Help me, somebody.
It's a song starting.
What's going on? Was that you guys? It's a thing here.
It's a thing here.
Sit
okay.
down at the board and pay attention. Okay, you remember vividly when you watched Baywatch.
Well, I was in I was here in Las Vegas, and it was during the AVN Awards, and I looked over, and there was like a couple of porno people in the booth across from me when I was at breakfast. I was just getting ready to leave that day. And I was like, oh, I recognize that dude from porno movies. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was reading in the paper, there was a Sunday paper, and there was an article about a guy that was being convicted of child pornography charges because it was really creepy, actually. He had, remember the water park on the strip? I don't even know if it's still there, the Wet and Wild or whatever.
Yeah, it's not there.
It's gone.
But he had gone there with a video camera and videotaped underage girls at the water park in their little bikinis, and he also went to like little girls' gymnastic competitions and stuff, and took tapes of them, and then sold these tapes through the mail. And he was claiming it's not child pornography because there was no nudity or anything uh-huh. in it, but it was all just tapes of little girls in their underwear, basically, uh-huh. and bikinis. And and I was like, well, this guy's crazy if he thinks he's going to get off.
You know? I mean,
then I got home and I was flipping on the TV and Baywatch was on, and I remember all this being in my head, like, wow, this guy's drawing this fine line and trying to get away with this thing. And on Baywatch, they had a character that was being depicted as a teenager, and running down the beach in slow motion in a bikini set to music, really sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what's the difference between what Baywatch is doing and what this guy was being convicted of in the paper?
What I like most about that story is that everybody remembers where they were on 9/11. And Drew Carey remembers where he was the first time he saw Baywatch.
My friend Sam Simon, he goes, he got me once. He goes, you know, ever since the tragic events of September...
You know, there was just a
I said the 11th.
A study that showed that something like a third of Americans don't know what year 9/11 happened.
What?
Yeah. They don't know that it was 2001. There's about a third.
So you say.
So, I mean, I don't think, maybe we can find something else to argue about. I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, it's not.
I think the information, the importance of the information is more important than the actual date.
Yeah, yeah. But if you were a school teacher and trying to get your kids to pass a test that the government put together, yeah, exactly. to get the diploma, you'd have to know the exact year or you'd say you didn't know anything about it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, that's
and then you'd be left behind.
We agree on that too. Let's just keep let's just keep feeling around. You know, but it's really, you know, there's all these people who've taken pictures of their kids. You know, I have a I have a daughter that's 14 months old and a son who's 2 months old, and we take pictures of them digitally. And then you read stuff like on the web about people who've, you know, used chemical cameras and taken pictures and gone in to get processed stuff of 3 or 4 year old kids running around and end up, if not doing time, at least being, you know, embarrassed and a lot of money in legal fees because of taking pictures of their kids.
Use a digital camera, perverts. Man, wise up. You don't have to ever get caught. Use a digital camera.
You know, there was
a Hotmail account.
And then there was even but then even go through your hard drive. You have to be really careful.
Don't put it on your hard drive at work. I used to know the editor of Maxim magazine. He's not the editor of Maxim anymore, and I thought they should have done Maxim should do an article where they teach you how to keep your porn on your computer without being caught.
Yeah, there should be an article.
Yeah, like how to hide your history from your wife and whatever, so it works. You just, like, how to keep everything on a separate hard drive or whatever you got to do in your computer, like how to partition it so nobody knows. There's got to be some techniques.
You don't have anyone that you're hiding your history from, are you, Drew?
No.
Have you been in a relationship where you've had a lie about that kind of stuff? Because I know guys are, but people that I don't know those people.
Yeah, I have, but, like, I used to feel, like, guilty where I'd be like, oh, I'm not doing anything, you know. I wait till she was gone, and then I go.
You don't just go, honey, come here, look at this?
Now I do, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the way you
That's the healthiest be. Way to be. You shouldn't, if you're in a relationship where you think you have to hide that stuff, you're in a bad relationship.
Yeah. I've always thought so.
It's your fault. You should be able to go to your woman or man and go, hey, let's look at this thing together and let's do this thing together. And if you're not comfortable enough doing that, then it's a problem.
Yeah, I send links to my wife all the time. Get a load of this, you know.
A buddy of mine sent me a link with this guy, like, it was from Scotland. These guys were from Scotland or Ireland or something. It was like the Irish Jackass. They all had Irish accent. Yeah. Rank it.
That's, you know, the stakes are getting higher. It's like the Olympics. The Jackass. Now that everybody has a video camera, the stakes are going to go through the roof.
Well, I don't know why this guy had to send it to me. I was like, oh, yeah, man. Hey, man. If there's any chicks or anything and on a trampoline bouncing up a net, see that?
Well, you know, the new Jackass is coming out. I've been told they have upped the ante quite a bit.
Oh, my.
And I was talking, you know, Bobcat.
What can they do?
I have no idea. But Bobcat was on the set and said that Johnny Knoxville was begging him. Bobcat, to shoot Johnny Knoxville in the ass with the real .22. And Bobcat said he drew the line there. He wouldn't do it. They were lining up how he could put it in a gun stand so he would just graze Johnny Knoxville's ass. And that's what they're doing, taking loaded guns and shooting them at each other's asses.
Did Johnny Knoxville's last movie do that bad? Was it that bad that he has to go back to getting shot in the butt with a .22?
Yeah, a .22 in the butt does not hurt nearly as badly as the reviews of the last film.
Dukes of Hazzard.
No, it was the one where he was the ringer. Yeah, the sympathetic retarded guy, the one where he was...
Which is just a South Park episode, right? I mean, they did that. No, Cartman.
Is it?
Cartman did enter the Special Olympics in order to win some sort of prize.
There was also a Simpsons where Bart pretended to be a Make-A-Wish kid so he could get a wish.
Yeah, I think that's... Now, have you done movies?
No, I did, well, Aristocrats. Yeah. And there's a documentary about the word F allowed to say. I seem to be the documentary king.
But have you ever wanted to move into movies? I mean,
yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
But haven't they given you like your Die Hard or something? They haven't offered you that?
No, I have to. I just actually switched to agencies and stuff so I can start looking at movie scripts and maybe do some of that.
But you must have turned down a ton of them when you were doing the big Drew Carey
show. When I was doing the big Drew Carey show, I used to get, I think my agency felt obligated to send me scripts, like movie scripts. So I would get like a stack every once in a while. I'd read like 3 pages and throw them away, uh-huh. like anything. You know.
But now you're ready to do a... are you one of those comics that wants to do drama? You want to do a serious role? How do you see yourself in a bad guy? No, I'm just guessing. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But
I never even talked about this in public before, that I would like to do a movie.
Is that a bad thing?
On air with anybody. Well, because I figured if I don't ever see anything and nobody ever hires me, then I don't look like an idiot. I'm honestly not... It's not like a live or die type thing where I think if I don't do a movie, I'm going to be so bummed out. You know, I mean, it's something that
it doesn't sound that way at all. It sounds
something I'd like to do. It's like photography or anything else. It's something I think I'd be good at. And
you know, when we were doing Broadway, they brought me in to our agency, which I don't even know who it was, ICM or William Morris or something. And they said they brought in all the agents. And
they want you to do Grease?
Yeah, exactly. And they said
Hairspray?
They said if you. What role would you see yourself doing in a movie? You know, look back on movies you've seen and tell us what role we should be looking for. And I said, Kurtz. And they said, what? I said, Kurtz in Apocalypse, Brando. And they said, oh, you want to be Brando in Apocalypse Now? And I said, yeah. And they said, well, what other roles do you think you'd be good at? And I said, that's it. I think if they do a remake of Apocalypse, I'd like to say the horror. You know, I saw they cut off their arms; they were in a pile there.
Give me 2 divisions of men, 20 divisions of men like that. If we can win this thing in a month,
sell the car, sell the house, sell the kids, sell the wife. I'm never coming back. That was the part I saw myself. Do you have one of those you see yourself in?
No, but it's interesting you mentioned that they say think of a role you did, because there's an acting teacher in L.A. who's really good, and one of the things it's all about, like, he teaches you how to market yourself well or how to look for roles that suit you better, and one of the techniques he tells people to do is to look back on old movies and find character, like roles you could have played if these movies were made today, like, oh, I could have done that role.
Yeah.
And, you
like
know,
Kurtz in Apocalypse.
Right. And you could say, seriously, you could say to yourself, man, I could really nail that if I would have had a chance to audition for it and that they wouldn't have just offered it to Marlon Brando. Or, you know.
Give us one. What was one you came up with?
Man, I have no idea.
Did you take this class? Were you with this? So
yeah.
You had to have one. You just don't want to tell us.
I probably just don't want to tell you. Because it's not like famous people, and then people go like, what?
Oh, I would love to hear.
I couldn't reconsider? I couldn't get a sitcom for, like, I would go to meetings about getting a sitcom, and then they would go, you know, we see you as part of, like, an ensemble, and how'd you see it? And I go, I really was thinking of getting a show, I'd like to have a show of my own. Like, yeah, but if you were in an ensemble, you could be, they always were thinking of me with an ensemble, because I'm fat, you know? They don't see a fat person starring anything on their own, you know what I mean? They wanted, like, they still do, they want, like, the cute kid from the valley, you know, from kind of, even today, they have this 80s, 70s attitude where, you know, if you're just a normal-looking schlub, forget it. You can't be a lead.
Wasn't that the original name of the Drew Carey Show? Was it the normal-looking schlub show?
Yeah, it was always the Drew Carey. I always wanted it to be called the Drew Carey Show.
You came up with that name yourself?
And I remember I was in an acting class at the time, and I remember telling the acting teacher there, I go, I think I'm getting my own show. What are you going to call it? I said, the Drew Carey Show. I was like, what do you think I'm going to be calling it? The Drew Carey Show. And for a minute, they were like, well, you know, maybe they don't want to name it after you because they have to renegotiate the contract. They can't fire you and hire somebody to play you. And I was like, well, too bad, because I want to call it the Drew Carey Show. And they really never had an argument with naming it after me, luckily. You know?
You didn't think about calling it I Love Drew?
You know what? If I had it to do all over again, I probably would have figured out a character name instead of my name.
Really?
Yeah, because then you could, you know, I don't know. It's just weird now that I, you know.
I think it was a great.
Two people get mixed up all the time.
Great choice. Oh, you are the Drew Carey Show.
I think I am.
You are. We'll be back right after this. Big Penn Jillette Show. It's the Penn Jillette Show.
Right.
Where the guy from the Drew Carey Show is talking to the guy from the Penn Jillette Show. And Michael Godot is really doing jack. Yeah. He's snapping with me. Drew doesn't lose one. There you go. This is Penn Jillette on the Big Penn Jillette Show, talking to Drew Carey from the Drew Carey Show, and with Michael Goudeau. And you were talking about naming your show. So you went to Hollywood with the idea of having a situation comedy.
No. I went to L.A. only to get on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
And you did, right?
Yeah, that's all I wanted to do. I lived out of my... I auditioned for it once, got the show, and then... he called me to do the show, and not Johnny, the booker, who's dead now, and who's a really great guy. And he called me to do the show, and I was not around at the time. I was actually staying in a friend of mine's apartment, who's a magician and works here in Las Vegas. And I was staying at his apartment, and I got the call on his message machine. This is before cell phones.
Is it Matt King?
Matt King.
Sure. Yeah. Matt King is fabulous.
And I was staying at his apartment because I was working at the Comedy Magic Club. I had no place to stay and didn't have any money, so he said I could stay at his place. He was on the road. Uh-huh. And I remember this comedy club owner that was helping me out, booking me and stuff, he called me up and he goes, "Drew, the Tonight Show called. They want you to do, call me back in a half hour. They want you to do the show." I mean, there was no cell phones back then. Car phones, maybe. And I just didn't get the call. So then I talked to Jim McCauley, who booked the acts on The Tonight Show. That was on Friday, and I called him on Monday, and I said, "Hey, I'm sorry I missed," because he knew I was in town. Mm-hmm. I said, "I'm sorry I missed your call." And he goes, "Okay, but I'd like to see you again before you schedule another appearance." And I said, "All right." And so he saw me again and didn't like me because I changed so much. I've only been doing comedy a couple of years, and I changed my act so much. And like when he saw me the first time, I stood behind the mic. I never moved the mic stand. I just stood there and talked like this. And the next time he saw me, the mic stand was out, and I was moving around. I was a lot looser, a little dirtier. And because I was working at clubs, trying to make a living. And so it took me 3 years to get back on the show, including an 18-month stint where I just lived out of my car. Like everything I fit everything I could into my station wagon, just drove gig to gig. And I was never in one place for more than a week at the same time.
Mm-hmm. But the clubs would give you an apartment or something.
Right. I didn't sleep in my car, but I lived out of it.
Sure.
And I lived in hotels and motels and comedy condos and whatnot. Went back to L.A., and all I could do, I was like, "I'm getting back on The Tonight Show." That's all there is to it. So I went back to L.A., auditioned again 3 years later, got the show, got on the show, and that's all I wanted.
And you were on with Johnny.
Johnny, Ed, and Doc, just like I wanted it to be. In November, and then they went off the air in, like, that March or April or something like that. And then right after me, Ray Romano made it. The week after me, Ray Romano went on and did his first appearance.
Man.
And right after that... who else was there was a bunch, there was like four of us in a row that went on and had their first one. We all got sitcoms. But Ray Romano called me. It was really it's a really good story. He called me, we know each other just from doing stand up, and I did the show on Friday. Monday I get a call from Ray Romano. It was a message, and "Hi Drew, this is Ray. Thanks for taking all the laughs."
You know, we did, we were asked to do The Tonight Show, and we said that we were going to do the water tank where Teller dies and leave him dead, going to commercial, leave Teller dead. So I was going to try to find a card, and then Teller would breathe as soon as I found the card. I fail at finding the card. Then he turns around, the card's inside his face mask, he's drowning, and then we just leave, go to commercial, right? So we get a call back that says Johnny doesn't want him dead at the end. He wants him to pop up and wave just as they're going to
commercial. Johnny Carson did magic.
Yeah. And we said, no. We want him to stay dead. That's the hip thing to do. Everybody knows he's not really dead. It'll be hip going to commercial. Got a call back. No. Johnny wants him to go up and wave. And I said, well, then we won't do it. And they called back and said, you can do it when Jay Leno is guest hosting. So we said, okay, got everything all set, and then decided at the last minute to not do the water tank and do another bit that would have been perfect for Johnny. So if you ever want to know who the biggest loser in the world is, look at me. And I got to know Johnny.
What was the bit that you ended up doing first time?
I don't know. We
Blast off or whatever?
We might have done. I think we might have done Rodent Roulette with Rat Traps or something.
Yeah, okay.
We might have done something. That might have been Letterman. But we did so many Lettermans and only a few Lenos that I get them confused. But we could have been on with Johnny. And years later, I got to know Johnny a little bit, had some phone conversations and emails and so on.
He's a great guy.
And I, the greatest guy ever. You know, he's a huge fan of skepticism and a huge fan of atheism, and put a lot of money into that and a lot of you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
There's a great story of Johnny, which he had Madeline Marie O'Hare on, the very famous atheist who got the you know, the
who sounds a Pentecostal preacher now.
Yeah,
or something like that.
And he had her on, and was the only one at that time who treated her with respect and with real affection. And as a kid, seeing that, it really changed my life, that Johnny was showing some respect for that. And although Johnny, I should say, was never an out atheist. He never said the word, "I am an atheist." I am just assuming from stuff he said. He was a very active skeptic, but I can't in good conscience say, because there's no time that Johnny Carson wrote something that said, "I am an atheist or there is no God." So I don't want to get that. I don't want to say that wrong. Well, you know what I mean? You have to respect that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I'm certainly not going to out a dead genius for my own sick propaganda purposes.
Yeah, we're just trying to fill an hour on the radio, folks.
Exactly. Now, did you get into stand-up in order to get into television?
No. Working as a waiter, and I got in trouble with the boss where I worked, who was having kind of a rough time at the time, and kind of took it out on me. And then
let it go, Drew.
I have. And but I'm just saying, you know, I was a good waiter, and it doesn't matter what he said. And all of a sudden, I was getting. I don't know if anybody's been a waiter out there. All of a sudden, I wasn't getting the good sections.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, I was working lunch instead of
I was a dishwasher.
Dinner.
Get up to
wait. You know, well, you know, if you used to work in night shifts and making good money, and then all of a sudden you're working lunch, making half the money, and then, you know, there's good sections and bad sections in a restaurant where people like to sit, and all of a sudden I was getting, you know, the bad sections all the time, like I was being punished.
In the Kearney, we call that the Doniker locations.
Doniker
is the Kearney word for toilet.
Oh, yeah,
over by the toilets, that's the Doniker location.
Yeah, so, you know, no business over there. So I was worried about making extra money, and a friend of mine, David Lawrence, who is a disc jockey working in Connecticut, I called him. I was like, "Man, everything's bad. I'm not making money." And I tried doing stand-up for like a couple months, like 6 years before that. And he said to me, "Well, if you ever," and I knew him from that. And he said, "Well, if you ever think of anything, any jokes, I'll put them on my radio show and I'll pay you. If you think of any jokes for my morning radio show." And I go, "Really, how much?" He goes, "Well, I'll pay $10 or $15 a joke." So I thought I could make an extra $100 a week.
Sure.
And I've got a book at the library on how to write jokes, and which I never knew before, and I didn't know there was a formula for it or a method to writing jokes like there is to writing any kind of fiction or thriller or horror or anything else.
So the mechanical banana joke, you use that formula.
The mechanical, yeah. No, you know, it's joke writing is, it's not, I hate to say formula, but there's techniques you can use to help you write jokes. And instead of having to sit down with a pen and paper and make a list, you can like zip through them in your head fast, these techniques. But I got a book, and it was called How to Write Comedy. And it was all mostly about how to write one-liners and gags. And I got it at the Cleveland Public Library, changed my life, and I started writing jokes, and they were bad, mostly, and really terrible. But this was in like Thanksgiving time, and I make goals every year, and one of my goals was to try these jokes on amateur night to see if they're any good.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the Cleveland Comedy Club on amateur night, won my first thing, got $50, wore the suit, wore the glasses, and I thought, holy cow, I can, these jokes are funny. And I went back week after week, and then I found out that you could make money, like as an opener, like a couple $100, $250, $150, and I was like, really? So I was making $400 a week as a waiter. You know, that's a lot of extra money, that extra $150 or $100. And I, you know, when I started doing, that's how I got into it, just so I could get extra money.
And then you quit the waiting job and moved on?
Eventually,
And when did it first cross your mind, hey, I should have a situation comedy?
After I got the Tonight Show, people started coming after me with development deals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I thought I could do it. You know, I had these meetings. Let me see. Let me get my story straight here. After the Tonight Show, I was really hot, like right away. And I remember at the Improv the week after the Tonight Show, all these agents came, 23, 26 William Morris agents came to see my show, came to see me do a set. And not only that, But they hung out upstairs at the Improv for an hour after the show and talked to me.
There you go.
You never see that.
Yeah.
And it was like the head of the lit department, the head of the commercials, the head of the sitcom department, like all these vice presidents and stuff at William Morris came and took me up, bought me champagne, talked to me like in a little, I was like Jesus in a little semicircle telling these people. And they were like, well, you know, there's books, there's this, there's that you could do. And, you know, I never signed with them. But it was one of those weeks, you know, yeah. It's like magical. And, I got a development deal. I got an agent, signed with an agency, got a development deal. And I did the Drew Carey Show project that spring and got fired from it at Disney.
Really?
Yeah, Dean Valentine, who was the head of the Disney television at the time. I remember him taking me and my agent out to lunch on the Disney lot and telling me how great I was doing, how much they believed in me. This was on a Friday. And at the time of the meeting, they were auditioning people to replace me.
Oh, that's great. That is just great.
Marty Klein. It was me and Marty Klein. He had out for lunch. Everything's going great. We really believe in Drew. Everything's and at the time of the at the lunch, they were already having
auditions. It was this direction. They were getting you away so they could have the
audition. They were talking and moving the right hand while their left hand was getting the thing ready.
That's great. Drew Carey of the Drew Carey Show on with Penn Jillette on the Penn Jillette Show. Mike Goodell. We'll be back after this. This is Penn Jillette on the big free FM, Michael Goodell, and we have Drew Carey with us here that we are chatting with. The reason we had that music that came in when you were in the middle of the story,
yeah.
The guys in the other room, Patrick and Jack, were trying to put, we have monitors, there's six monitors in the studio room where we can see a clock and we can see the guys working in the other room, and they were going to put in a DVD and put on porno for us while we were talking about it.
Clever.
Get us in the right kind of mood.
Clever.
Because three guys in a room talking about comedy should have porno. Don't you think?
Hey, man, we'll do the funny out here. You don't have to worry about it in there.
How long did you do the Drew Carey Show?
9 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, 236 episodes, and then that's a lot of episodes, man. Yeah. And then a real long time, and then 150-some episodes of Who's Line, and so almost 400 half-hour. And then plus, if you include the Green Screen Show, over 400 half-hours of primetime TV.
There you go.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
And,
it's no wonder people are sick of me.
Has your recognition gone down at all?
No. It's crazy. There's syndication everywhere. Yeah. I was in Germany for the World Cup, and I got recognized everywhere. It's all over the world.
How do you work as a photographer when everybody's recognizing?
Well, I didn't say everybody. a lot of countries, they don't know who the hell I am, don't care. And when I go down to the photo room to get my credentials and stuff for that game and go out, they don't care who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, and I use a fake name, too, when I use my photographer. When I do my photography, I use a fake name.
Cool.
And, that's sold under a fake name. Like, nobody knows, you know, like photographers do, but the general public doesn't know who I am.
Now, the second time. Or maybe the second time, or the, I guess it was the second time, we did the Drew Carey Show.
Yeah. You guys played lawyers for Winfred Lauder. You were sleazeball lawyers for Winfred Lauder.
And the first time you asked us to be on, I was more tired than I'd ever been in my life. We're finishing up a show, and we said, we'd love to do this show, but I'm just too tired. There's too much stuff we're doing. And you called me personally and said, do it, and so we did, and I couldn't remember anything. I didn't even know where I was. We went on a second time, which was a good time, and you said to me at that time, you said, just chattering between rehearsal stuff, you said, if I weren't doing this show, I certainly wouldn't look like this. And, and then you told me you'd be covered with tattoos.
I probably would have been.
And head shaved and everything else. And now you're sitting here, you're not doing the show, you're wearing Drew Carey glasses, and you've got a hat on so I can't
reading.
See your hair.
They're like my reading glasses now. And I got LASIK surgery, so I don't need them to see far like I used to, but now I need them for reading. And so I carry them with me all the time, like 80% of the time I'm wearing them. And or I'm wearing my wire rims, which are in my pocket right here. Uh-huh. If I think I can't get recognized with my wire rims, I'm kidding myself. So, but now I'm still doing stand-up and improv and stuff, so I'm still doing public appearances. Mm-hmm. Like, if I was just like Joe Citizen and I was working in a warehouse or whatever, or a waiter, I'd totally be tattooed up. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, and I was in the Marine Corps Reserves.
You were in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, I was in the Marine Reserves, yeah.
Jesus Christ, you've done everything. Waiter, Marine Corps? I mean, how many people can say they were a waiter in the Marine Corps and the star of the Drew Carey Show?
There can't be
many people that can say
one
that.
One person that can
probably
say that.
Probably a dozen or two.
That makes me pretty darn unique.
Fingernails on chalkboard.
That makes me
so
kind of unique.
Do you know how many interviews have started with the interviewer saying to me and Teller, sitting there and going, well, you know, you two are very unique. And Teller and I both saying,
God.
You can't modify unique.
You can't.
Unique means one of a kind. And then from then on, the whole interview goes right to hell. Because we've corrected the usage of a word in the first question.
I know, but that's like, basic grammar.
I know.
But people say that all the time, don't they, on the news?
Really unique.
Yeah.
One of the worst is one of the most unique.
One of the most pregnant. You're pregnant or you're not pregnant.
So
unique or it's not unique.
I get you off the subject. You know about when you were in the Marine Corps.
And do you want to talk about impact and effect?
Yeah, sure.
What is the impact? Oh, you mean what's the effect on?
Yes.
Is that what you meant?
You're talking about a noun or a verb. What about the Marine Corps? Marine Corps is where you learn grammar.
Yeah.
When
I was Marine Reserves, I was like, man, when I get out of here, I'm growing my hair down on my butt. Mm-hmm. I don't care. And now I've never been able to get a cut grown that long. I grew it out a little bit, and I look like an idiot now because I'm balding and stuff. You know, I'm fat. I look like a dope.
Like me.
No, but it was like, it's not like all the way long like yours is. It was like just tufting over the ear, over the ears where you're just like, man, this looks ridiculous.
And do you have any tats?
No. Thinking about it, you know, if the U.S. men's team would have got out of their group stage at the World Cup, I was seriously going to get a tattoo of the Don't Tread on Me symbol they had and get it on my arm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as good luck for the
men's team. So you're a soccer freak.
I am now, yeah. I can tell soccer players by their, like, I don't know who plays for the, I couldn't tell any of the Browns and the Cleveland Browns if I met them right now. They were in helmets and stuff anyway. But I could tell a couple of them. But soccer players, I know by their face because they're out there with no helmet on or anything, mm-hmm. and I can just pick out soccer players by their face. I know exactly, you know, what foot they use, and I can now heckle with authority when I go to a so I can't play the game, but I know to yell at a guy.
Did you ever play soccer?
No, never.
Are you playing any sports?
I wrestled a little bit when I was in high school. I was really bad at it.
I bet you did.
I was really bad at it.
That was the only release for a Pentecostal boy, wasn't it?
That's where I had my my self-pleasure. No, I was really terrible at it. But, you know, I didn't want to go through high school without participating in a sport.
Why?
Like, that was the only reason I took part. Because I thought it should be part of my high school experience. Honestly, that's the only reason.
And then you're a good student?
I was okay, B's and whatever. And then I remember over the loudspeaker, I said, man, I shouldn't go all the way through high school without participating in a sport. And the announcement that morning, any boys interested in going out for wrestling, bring your gym clothes. And I said, all right, fine. You know, just to say that I participated in a sport when
you
I was
sure
in school.
You sure were easy to push around, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, I had this idea that I should, and I still do, kind of, where I, like, wow, I shouldn't live my life without having certain experiences.
But what's still on the checklist?
Paris
Hilton.
Never been married. Don't have a kid. Like, how do you like being married and having a kid?
I was a nut because I said that I wouldn't get married till everything was absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And everybody told me, you know, that's insane.
Right.
And then I met someone who I consider to be perfect and who still is perfect, Emily, and I married her. We had kids like right away. So now,
wow.
But of course, you know, I had my first kid when I was 50, which is you know, you're an old father, which is creepy. And
yeah. What did you think about? Isn't that scary?
It was really scary, but my other choice is not to have kids. So it becomes, yes, it would have been better for a lot of reasons to have kids when I was 25, you know, but now I have more money. I'm not panicked about my career.
You don't have to travel as much?
Yeah, I don't have to travel at all, really. And when I was on Broadway and working, you know, doing Letterman, you know, once every 6 weeks and doing Stern every week and doing all that stuff, I would have had to say, you know, I love the kids, but I don't get to spend any time with them. Now, even though I'm doing a live show, a radio show, a TV show and all this, there's still time to really enjoy them. And, of course, my mom was 45 when I was born.
Wow.
So having older parents, I thought was always good. So it's a little creepy. But do that. I mean, you can wait.
During the birth, did your wife yell out, oh, God?
No, she did not. See, this is the funny thing. Everybody says to me, you know, how could you find a woman as hardcore as you are on the atheism and libertarianism and all of that? And the truth is, she's so much further gone than I am.
Really?
I am the forgiving, accepting, liberal one in the family.
Like, don't you think, but isn't, there's got to, there's... some kind of we all have an energy in us.
Well, yeah, but no energy that isn't accounted for biologically. What you're talking about is love, which is a beautiful, wonderful thing. But there's nothing supernatural about it.
No, but yeah, and that's what I recognize.
If you look up God in the dictionary. There's not a picture of you.
Picture man.
No, but if you look at, if you look up God the dictionary, the idea of some God that has some sort of intervention with lives is somehow there. And I think by using the word God, you're cheapening the idea of love, which is a more beautiful idea, and that people haven't been killed as much in the name of.
God to me is that. It's the energy. It's like we're God.
Uh-huh.
Then
you're using words in an eccentric way.
Carry inside of us, and that's, you know...
If you mean people, say people.
Right.
If you mean beauty and truth, say beauty and truth. That's my entire argument.
Okay.
Is just that when you say the word God and that you believe in God,
you're naming a separate thing.
But you're also giving power to the people who go, oh, it's a good thing to believe in God, all these people do. And really, in recent, you know, there's been some very bad events done in the name of God just in our lifetime. I don't know what year it was. It was like 9-11, 2000 or 2001, sometime around there. There were some very bad events with faith-guided missiles.
September,
so that's why I'm a little bit of a stickler about that. I got more of a nut afterwards. But my wife, you know, I would always have girlfriends who I would talk my crazy nonsense to, the libertarianism and stuff, and give them books and stuff, and they'd go along with it. But when the first day I met Emily, she had come back from having had dinner with the whole atheist group, you know, with Richard Dawkins and all those guys. She'd been to a skeptic meeting with Amazing Randy. She was already, you know, had her libertarian card and wanted to meet me because she couldn't believe there was someone that agreed with her on everything. So it was a really good thing.
Wow.
So I really believe, and I know that many people disagree with me on this, but I think if you're going to get married and spend your life as a team with somebody, yes, you should be sexually turned on by them. Yes, they should make you laugh. You should enjoy their company. But you should agree on everything.
Really?
I think you should agree on everything. There's no joy in that disagreement. There'll be plenty of disagreements over, you know, where we're going to go this afternoon and about this
what
friend.
What color to paint
friend.
The bathroom.
All
kind
of that
thing,
stuff you can argue about all you want, but get all the stuff in a row. I mean, I don't know how there are relationships where the woman believes the man's going to go to hell and the man believes the woman's a superstitious idiot. And I have a lot of friends who have that situation.
Wow.
It's nuts. So I try to agree on everything. And I know that's...
Well, some people...
My mom and dad did. My mom and dad never... argued, never raised their voice to
some people want to be with somebody, you know, and they'll sacrifice a lot to be with another person.
Yes, exactly. And it's worth it. It really is worth it. I just couldn't do it. I tried to convince myself, you know, everything's so good on paper.
Do you feel
she's
like,
because
so you work so closely with Teller every night, you know, you guys 6 nights a week and your
six
show's
nights
here.
A week, and we've been doing that for over 30 years.
Like, don't you feel, you know, as close to your partner as you would a wife?
No, it's a very, very different thing.
It doesn't turn you on sexually?
I didn't say that. I don't put words in my mouth. But I've always seen that as business, which is why we get along so well. We try to see it as running a dry cleaning operation as opposed to...
Oh.
Yeah. I think it's a very important part of working together. And we're now winding down. Didn't that fly by?
Yeah, it really does.
We're with Drew Carey here at the Drew Carey Show. It's been off the air for how many years?
Who knows, man?
And still a superstar. We have Drew Carey here. We'll be back the next time we're back. Drew Carey, just one of the really fine, fine human beings. Like that. Watch the time go down. That's all I'm doing there.
No, I think I said a bad word.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Okay, it's okay. They'll take it right out just like that. Did you say f***, or what'd you do?
That's the one I said.